Welcome to Polycast, a Civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Canis Albinus.
Makalua.
The main team.
Mega Bears fan.
With guest co-hosts.
20 minutes late for a new program, that's not too bad, I don't think. Good day, everybody, and welcome to Polycast, episode 343. There's getting to be a lot of these things. I am your co-host, Canis Albinus, and I'm joined with our regulars, Makalua.
Pretty quick for only short technical difficulty cast.
Mega Bears fan.
Now on TeamSpeak.
And filling in for our missing Lemian team is Druzane.
This is Druzane saying, hold on.
Stuff and things.
I'm just here to warn everyone that Makia is indeed a Cylon, and I recommend throwing her out of the airlock at ESAP.
No, that's tomorrow we play Cylons and throw each other out the airlock.
Okay. We've been playing a lot of games lately. Phil's not here, but yeah, I've been playing a lot of games here that are not Civ, so forgive me if I'm a little out of date on a few things.
One of these days, I got to get a free Sunday night so I can play them board games with you.
Well, we do some crazy...
For you, it's Sunday at noon.
Yeah.
That's the problem of trying to find his time frame.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a few hours different than everybody else.
Well, our normal host is British time, so it gets interesting.
Okay, so I guess we should talk about actual Civ stuff then. Let us begin with news. So apparently the Rise and Fall expansion for Civilization VI is finally available on iOS for the lovely price of $30. And I guess all other content for the game on iOS or for all platforms, I'm not sure, is also on sale.
Did you say so, $3 or $30?
$30.
Yes, okay.
$29.99 USD.
Wow, that's a lot for... So when I first read this, I was prepped for this like an hour before this, and I was just skimming this, and I'm like, oh yeah, that's fine. You know, Gathering Storms happened, you know, just about a year ago, so that makes sense. Oh wait, this is Rise and Fall?
Yep.
For full price?
And on top of that, the iPad and Switch versions of the game are almost identical, except I think they like max out on like standard map size and number of civs. So like it is a slightly scaled down version. So you'd think maybe there'd be a little bit of a discount there, but apparently, and I guess it's been selling pretty well. So
I'm sure it sells pretty fine, but this is kind of the problem that I have when you have a situation where you have a difference between the PC version and non-PC versions. If you can only sell it in one location on the mobile, then yeah, you can do it for full price. But this is a 2 or 3 year, well, not 3 years, but 2 years expansion, and it's not even what's current in the game. I don't know. I don't think it's worth the value. In the article, it said that was a pretty good value. I don't, but if it's your only opportunity to play Civ 6, then fine. But otherwise, I would highly recommend just hold off until the rest of the content comes out.
I am of the opinion that anything that comes out on the iOS, you pay what you get for it because you're already using an overpriced piece of technology. So
yeah.
As for the Switch, yeah, that's going to be expensive, but it's the Switch. They can charge that much because there's never been a Civ game on Switch before.
They can. I mean, they can make any price points that they want to. I just don't think that if you are a smart consumer, if you have the opportunity, now maybe your computer can't run Civ 6, but your phone can, in which case that's just how it is. But if you can run Civ 6 for a lot less than $30 for Rise and Fall, the first expansion out of two, then I would suggest you find better ways to consume that particular game.
I also want to point out, as I always do whenever we talk about the iOS or Switch versions of the game, if you have another tablet that just runs Windows, you might be able to play Civ 6, you know, just the regular Windows version off Steam on that tablet. I have a Microsoft Surface, and, you know, I have to run the game on low graphics settings, which makes all the leaders look like they have platinum white hair for some reason. But it runs just fine. I don't even have to use strategic view or anything. So if you want to get a portable Civ fix, and Civ is really great as a portable game, I always want to emphasize that as well. I take it on like road trips when I'm in the passenger seat, obviously, plane trips, and I really enjoy being able to do that on trips. So it's great as a portable game, and if you've got a decent or high-end Windows tablet, or maybe even an Android tablet that can emulate Windows, then you can play it there. You do not have to shell out for the iPad version.
Yes, that is absolutely a good way to be able to use your game on a portable system if you have the opportunity. So that is a good thing to mention.
Yeah, and again, I want to emphasize that the iPad and Switch versions of the game are the full game. They're only slightly scaled down in terms of the options that you have for like setting the size of the game. So you the only limitation is that you cannot have the big epic, you know, scale games that you can play on PC.
What do you mean epic scale?
I like I said, I think it maxes out at the standard map size and number of civilizations, so you cannot, I think the iPad, and you know, someone else can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the iPad and Switch versions do not allow you to play large or huge maps or have more than the default 8 or 10 civs. You can play smaller maps, but you can't play the larger ones.
All right. I guess they've got to a point where they're like, this app is going to explode if you make it big enough.
We could let you play an epic marathon map, but your handheld would melt.
Yeah. You'd have epic processing times as well.
Yeah. And you thought PC processing times could be bad sometimes. Oh, boy.
You know, I want to mention, I've been noticing that as I've been playing Civ the last few weeks, I feel like the turn times have improved. I don't know if they updated that in one of the recent patches, but I've been noticing it's been, turn times have been moving along a lot quicker. The processing times between turns.
The main team mentioned that when he got his new computer. I think it's just really dependent on your computer, because I never noticed anything, but I always, turn times for Civ 6 were quite fine. Much more than Civ 4, since Civ 5, rather.
You know what? It might be that I just replaced a faulty battery on my laptop, so maybe that's the...
Oh, there you go, yeah.
That might be it, now mm-hmm. that I think about it.
Because I think a lot of it is local, not server-side, rather, when people are complaining about the turn times.
Well, I play almost exclusively single-player, so I should not be getting server lag.
But I still think the price is a little, but they can, you know, if they want to monopolize, then they can monopolize. That's
yeah, that was my biggest issue when the iOS version was first released. Like, even just the base game, I think they wanted the full, like, $60 or $50 or whatever. And I was like, really? Like, 2 years or a year?
2 years later? Game? Really?
Yeah.
Because what are you going to do?
It was worse because at the time, I thought that the game was discounted on Steam already. Like, you know, like the base game had gone down to like $30 or $40, like, you know, base price. But apparently that hadn't happened either. I think Civ 6 is, unless you get it during a sale, is still also the full $50 or $60 on Steam. So,
yeah.
Yeah. I think it finally was during this summer sale. I don't know if it was earlier, though.
It was $15 in this summer sale.
Right, but that's the sale. So I think after the summer sale's over, I think it probably returns to the full price, unless they finally did drop the base price.
The full price for current Civilization, according to steampowered.com, is... I'm not stalling for time, I swear. My internet is fast, I promise.
You don't need to stall. You can cut it out.
$59.99 on special promotion, 70% off until July
29th.
Ooh. So there you go. It's what they're doing is it's the same price on every platform, I guess, because they don't want, you know, the owners of one platform to feel like, you know, they had to pay more than owners on another platform.
Yeah, just because I was an early adopter, I had to pay more? What?
But what if I want to play my second expansion on my iOS?
Then you, I guess, have to wait another year or two.
Or two.
I think it'll be less time than that. But
I hope so.
All right.
There was another article that I did not put into the news because I found it 45 minutes before the show started, but it basically said, we expect the Switch expansion packs out by the end of the year, so.
And that makes sense. I mean, now that they have Aspyr, right, is the name of the company that does the port. Yeah, now that they have experience with the vanilla game and with the first expansion, you know, porting the later expansions and DLCs is probably going to be a lot quicker.
Well, all the other DLCs are already available.
Oh, yeah, that's right,
The Switch version includes all of the digital deluxe DLC stuff, I think. Time to get it back out. Give me an excuse to play Civ while...
That's fine. Multitasking is a great talent to have.
Oh, yeah, it would be great if I actually had that talent.
These things are all right.
Let's see, Alexander...
There's also the cut thing you can do.
Well, I could do that, but that just makes it boring.
Yeah, no, this is content.
This is just a bonus for the people who are listening live.
Yes, I noticed that Australia is here. Yeah.
Oh, well, that's all you need,
right?
Mate?
Australia is in the Switch version, and we also have...
I didn't know what you meant by Australia is here. There are many things that Australia is here could mean.
Jadwiga, Cyrus, Cleopatra, well, she's in the normal game, Alexander. At least some of them are here.
Yeah, I think they have all of them on there.
Actually, I'm not sure.
DLC civs?
Yeah. I'm not seeing the probably. Indonesia civs. The Indonesia and...
I'd imagine.
Maybe because you did not purchase them?
Yeah, Vikings, Traders, and Raiders, Outback Tycoon, Jadwiga's Legacy, Conquest of Alexander. So
it's got to be in there. There's no way that they would not be consistent.
It's not here. The rule sets are not there. So
that's a little odd.
Poland is there. Vikings are there. Australia's there. Persian, Macedon, Nubia, and Khmer in Indonesia are not. That is weird.
So hey, if you're gonna play it on a different handheld, then I guess you don't have the Khmer.
Basically, okay, any civilization from the DLC that is not a European civilization is not in the game.
Okay.
Well, that's weird.
Wait, Australian is European?
Australian is descendant of European, yes.
Yeah, I was going to point
out. Australia, like America and Canada, follow the European group.
Okay.
Because in the art files, American means Native American.
This has been quite a fun topic. A lot more fun than I thought it would be.
I mean, we thought it was just going to be a regular news item, but nope.
Well, I think we can kill that one there and just move on to the next topic, which is apparently important.
Yeah, why is the district so... What is the district and why is it so hard to repair? Well, because it's like a whole mess. Okay, if it's one stall, like the example on here is Victoria's screenshot is a market taking 7 turns and an industrial zone taking 38 to repair. But think about that in terms of in real life, like if you have a... The modern version of a market would be probably like your downtown commercial business district. If somebody came in and pillaged a bunch of the buildings there or blew them up, it would take a while to repair that. An industrial zone, yeah, just the same. I mean...
Yes, but it would take a lot less time to rebuild the roads around the buildings than it would to rebuild the buildings. And that's what the districts represent, is it's the area in which the buildings are located, not the buildings themselves. I guess that's the point that she's trying to make.
Well, yeah, I think regardless of what they represent, like in terms of gameplay, I think they take quite a bit too long.
When I saw what is a district, I could not finish. I could not complete. Or sorry, my brain auto completed to a miserable pile of secrets. But that's just me.
There's also the comparison to, you know, a pillaged improvement, which is effectively free to improve. I don't even think it costs a builder charge. So as long as you just have a builder with one charge sitting around, you can go around and repair all of your improvements like for free. Yeah. And like just compare that to districts. It's, you know, massive disparity.
The builder can rebuild an entire mine and a highway system, but no, it's going to take you half the game that's remaining to rebuild your district. Hold up.
Yeah.
So I haven't played since they added the production patch. And my understanding was that because of what they did, district time should not take as long as what Victoria is showing here. It may be an outlier, but seven turns to rebuild a market seems a little excessive. I don't know if you guys have seen this kind of turn time.
I've conquered a couple cities in a game that I was playing earlier this week, and rebuilding the districts, I think, was still taking on the order of like 20 or more turns. But I do want to point out, though, that in Victoria's screenshot, like, it looks like it shows the option to build a bank, which is not available yet because the market is not repaired. And that's mm-hmm. It says it's going to take 65 turns.
Yeah.
Twice as much.
Yeah, proportional to what apparently that city's actual output is, that market one's not bad. The industrial zone, though, whoo!
Yeah, so that city looks like it's just a very unproductive city. to begin with. Because, you know, depending on, I don't know what game length Victoria is playing on, but, you know, taking 65 turns to build a bank is something like, what, an eighth or a twelfth of the entire game? So
actually, what I want to know what the production cost is now, just on base, because that's...
It's whatever the production cost for our new district is.
Yeah, and you can see that in the screenshot as well. The theater square and the entertainment complex are both there, and they also take 38 turns to rebuild. So the issue is that you're not paying a discount. You have to rebuild the entire district from scratch, essentially. Even though you'd think there's, you know, there'd be something salvageable.
Plus your 120 hammers, but I know that's different from, yeah, so that's, I don't know.
But well, the base cost for district scales over the course of the game, so...
I know that.
Yeah.
One thing that she brings up, natural disaster can just drop by and just kill your production for, you know, most of the game. And I mean, you know, that is part, it sucks, but it is part of the risk you have depending on where you decide to settle.
Yeah, for the case of like floodplains and volcanoes, for the case of hurricane or dust storm or something like that, not quite as much. And we've had that discussion on this show before, that, you know, the disasters are not all created equal. I definitely agree with Victoria that those costs are too much. I do not think it should cost the same as building a new district from scratch to repair a district that's already there, but which is damaged.
Yeah, you'd think it would be like a half cost or something like that, or even a third of the cost because you went and you pillaged it. So it looks something more like repairing that market.
Yeah.
Or maybe even just having, like, I mean, I guess having the district and the buildings is kind of the same deal here, but maybe even just having, like, different stages of damage for a district. Kind of like if you remember, you go back to Civ 4, you could pillage the huts / hamlet / town / villages, you know, multiple times down until, I think, eventually removing it from the tile. So it just took that extra time to build it back up. So they could have something similar where, like, maybe you pillage a district once, and it's, like, partially damaged, and then you pillage it again, and it's, like, moderately damaged, and then you pillage it again, and it's completely damaged.
The reason I agree with you a lot is because it's kind of difficult to accept that cities have so much defenses in Civ 5 and Civ 6, but, you know, one pillage can ruin a district.
I mean, if it's a fully developed district with all the buildings in it, then it's going to take you 3 or 4 turns to pillage it there, but that's not going to come into play until later in the game. So, you know, especially if your city has walls or defenses, or maybe even there should be, like, some project that you can do in a city that's, you know, on the front lines where you can maybe reinforce the districts so that they are, you know, harder to pillage or take less damage, you know, as, like, a preventative measure. Like, just having something to make it so that you don't have to pay that crazy cost if the district is pillaged would be nice. And I have a barking dog in the background. I don't know if you all can hear that.
Can't hear it at all.
I do not. I wish I could hear, though. I like dogs.
I do not like dogs on recorded things I have to edit, but
I don't like I don't like high turn costs on
districts.
District stuff.
My dog is expressing her discontent with how expensive to repair districts.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fair. Good dog.
And there are other suggestions on this this topic as well. Some people are suggesting that maybe you could use builder charges or military engineer charges to repair districts or to, you know, contribute towards the cost of building a district, like I think Aztec's special ability allows for that. So
yeah, I did see that, but production for production is always something that's questionable, or paying production to get production.
To be fair, though, it would take less time to put out a military engineer or one of the builders and repair that, even if it was only a partial repair, and then the city could handle the rest. And then you wouldn't be 38 turns. They could bring it back down to an under 10 turns reasonable time.
Yeah, and another workaround, of course, would be to just start sending all of your, you know, putting all of your trade routes in that pillaged city to buff up your production.
They're now aid caravans.
Yeah. And there is actually the concept of aid in Gathering Storm, although it's gold and you can't unfortunately convert that directly to production. And being given aid does not speed up the repair because you can't buy repairs with gold. So, but you could hypothetically use that gold to buy other infrastructure. Maybe you buy a water mill in that city to boost its production, or if the industrial hub was not pillaged, then you can spend that aid money to buy a workshop or a factory.
Maybe we should be able to buy it.
I think that would be the most logical response.
There is the one governor that lets you buy, who has a promotion that lets you buy districts with gold, and I don't know if that allows you to repair pillage districts with gold. So you could also, is it Reyna that does that?
She's the gold one, so maybe? I think so. Don't call me on that. I spent a long time, so I used her.
Yeah, that sounds right. Because Liang's the one that has the fisheries and stuff.
It's either Reyna or it's Liang, I think.
I think it's Liang's fishery lady.
So there's ways that you can deal with it, but I still think that it's ridiculously expensive. It should not cost... Unless the district is completely removed from the game, you should not have to pay the full 100% production cost to build it again. And if I am going to have to spend the 100% cost to build it again, like, it would be nice, I think, to have it just removed from the game so that maybe I could build it in a better spot. You know, get a better adjacency.
The cost formula's value is still based on, you know, your tech and civics. Did that change, or is that the same way it works now?
That's the same, and I think it's also modified by, like, the number of that particular district that exists in the world. So the more of that district that other players have, I think the cheaper your district becomes. It's like a kind of a rubber band mechanic. I think that's still in the game.
Because Victoria's, you know, I'm not going to try to toot her horn here, but, like, she... plays pretty high level pretty well. So maybe she just went through the text pretty quickly, and because she went faster than the balance intended, now she's stuck with a pillage that is a lot more expensive than should be designed for. You know what I mean?
Yeah, possibly. But again, looking at the 65 turns for that bank, I think that's just a really unproductive city, like, in general.
Because if the market was one of the parts of the first parts of the, like, the commercial hub is still whole, and they just have to repair the marketplace. And maybe the commercial hub was one of the earliest, not the earliest, but earlier things built. So that's why it's cheaper, relatively speaking. You know, it's the markets early on in a commercial hub, whereas the bank is much later era.
Yeah. And of course, there's also, you know, preventatives, which is if you're at war, you know, maybe don't let the other, you know, Civ, put units on your districts. You know, put your own units there to protect them. And in case of disasters, there is the one governor, I think this one is Liang, who can prevent damage from disasters. So if you're in a high-risk area like a coast that gets a lot of hurricanes, or, you know, next door to an active volcano, you know, you should probably have a promoted Liang in that city.
Probably, yeah.
The production of that city, according to basic mathematics, is 7.63 hammers. That's not a very productive city.
And this, of course, is one of the drawbacks of chopping everything. You know, so one of the hallmarks of high-level play is you chop everything because production now is better than production later. But this is one of the drawbacks to doing that. Because if you've harvested all, like, the stone and, you know, stuff like that, and I think copper is harvestable, if you harvest all of that stuff from your city and now you don't have any productive tiles, if a disaster comes along or someone comes and pillages that city, you're going to have a tough time rebuilding it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that I think I actually did like about Gathering Storm, was having that chance of the random disasters really did kind of change the calculus in your head about, oh, well, should I really chop all this stuff and harvest it, or should I, you know, leave it, you know, just in case, because I want to make sure that I have a buffer of productive tiles just in case a disaster does happen.
That's possible what happened. I would say that you need to be able to, we should have the opportunity to buy repairs with gold.
Considering there's sometimes in the late game you have so much gold that it's not that you don't know what to do with it, but you would like to put it into something more productive than just, let me buy more units.
You could play as Hungary and buy City State Envoys.
Also, you can have 91 city.
Yeah,
that too.
Oh, you're hungry. Okay, you win. Congratulations for being hungry.
Congratulations for being, like, Genghis Khan.
It's actually 4.46 hammers per turn. I calculated that wrong.
What did you talking about the number of hammers that you estimate that city has?
Yeah, it requires 265 or 290 hammers to build, and it takes 65 turns. So divide those numbers and end up with 4.46 blah, 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 blah.
So yes, that is terribly unproductive.
Yeah, I think at that point you got your own problems that you need to deal with.
At that point, your city has some serious issues.
Burn it. Oh, wait, you can't do that.
Well, you can raise it as long as it's not a capital or a city-state. No, can you raise city-states now?
I think you might be able to raise city-states now.
Yes, finally. You can.
You cannot raise original capitals. Except I think for Phoenicia, because she has that fancy ability to move hers around, and I think when you move it, it actually moves the original capital designation, but I could be wrong, because I have actually tried that.
Phoenicia does move its original capital.
Which means you can totally troll someone trying to go for a domination victory.
Doing that is so expensive, like, on your resources to do that.
Oh yeah, which is why I'd say it would be trolling.
Yeah. I mean, I can see how that would work out in multiplayer, but man, that's that's a really expensive troll.
Yeah, it is.
But the important point is it would be fun.
I've played games online. I know the sort of things
fun
that people
does
do.
Require resources.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fun is not free.
Fun is not free. Well, sometimes it is.
Sometimes, but yeah, you know.
any other good insights from any other posters on this topic? I think we got all the good stuff out of it.
Yeah, it looks like other people are taking the let us buy repairs kind of
approach.
Philosophy.
Okay, let's talk about city-states. Who are your top five best city-states with homage to Dan Q for the top blank statements?
Dan will be disappointed it's only top five and not top 10.
Also,
he will not be able to make as big a spreadsheet.
How many city-states are there, like, total?
A lot.
Okay, I guess that's a lot then.
Do I need to look it up? I think I should look it up.
No, don't worry about it.
Yeah, I've got the
I'm just
going
to say it's
city-states.
I'm just going to say 50 and move on.
I don't think it's quite that many, but it's somewhere on the order of like 30 or 40. And remember, some of them are only in certain versions of the game, because some of them were replaced because they became cities of like full-blown civs that were added by DLC or expansions.
They didn't change that globally for like the older expansions?
I think they just replaced those city-states with other city-states. So I think the number is consistent across the game, but if you're looking at like a list of all the city-states that have ever been in the game, it might be a longer list.
I'm counting 43.
That's about as many as the number of civs in the game, I think.
Yeah, that is true.
Yep. And they all have a unique bonus, which means they did a lot of work.
Yeah. No, I love the city-state mechanics in this game in that respect. If they had the ability to bully them like they did in Civ 5, I think I'd be a very happy camper with regard to how city-states work.
In no particular order, my opinion on the best five city-states, Carthage is a good one. What else is good? Hong Kong is good if you like city projects. I don't. Kabul is excellent. I'm going to put Kabul and Carthage up there. Mexico City is good. Nanmadal is good.
I don't think I've seen Mexico City in any games yet.
Oh, what's the fifth one? There's one more that I like that I forget.
Nazca?
Toronto.
Oh, Toronto is still here, even though we have Canada.
Yeah. I'm not sure how that works.
Well, it's just a city of Canada. A province, rather.
There are no American cities in this game, except Cahokia. Cahokia is not really an American city. It's a city that was in current America.
I think that was a Iroquois city, right?
No, it was a Mississippian culture.
Okay.
In basically where St. Louis is.
Like, if you were going to go for a Canadian city that was going to act like a city-state, you'd think it would be Quebec?
Yeah, you'd think so.
Yeah, isn't Montreal a city-state too?
No, I'm not seeing it in this list.
It was in Civ 5, I think.
Yeah, Civ 5 we had Montreal, and we got to make all the, look, it's Quebec jokes.
Wait a minute. I'm seeing a note down here that says Toronto was replaced by something in the Gathering Storm. Apparently Mexico City.
Okay, because see, I was thinking that didn't sound right, because it's like, wait, every time that they've done this, they've usually replaced it. I mean, they didn't have to replace Auckland when they added the Maori, because, you know, it's different civilizations, so to speak.
Yeah. And Auckland is one of my favorite city-states. That was going to be in my list.
Yes, it makes sense. If I'm Australia, I have to have Auckland, because they're the little brothers.
Oh, if Auckland, you have any coastal city, you want Auckland.
So we'll have to subtract 6 from that list, because it included civilization, or it included names that were renamed by other civs.
So we're at like 36, right?
Yeah, Antioch replaced Amsterdam.
I would have thought
there'd be like a little asterisk or something next to the ones that were replaced. Or
nope, but just by the ones that they were replaced with.
Yeah, at least on this wiki.
Babylon replaced Seoul. Bologna replaced Stockholm. And I will say that, what is it? What replaced Carthage in Gathering Storm? Nicaragua. Carthage is off my list because it doesn't exist anymore. Nagazaramu.
I'm not sure I've even seen that.
It gives
land combat or support units plus 20% cheaper. 2 purchase with gold and each camping district with city in for each encamp district building in that city. So 60% cheaper land unit purchases if you have a military academy. Sounds interesting, but I think Muscat is better.
So what about Maki and Drusane? Do you have a list of top 5?
You can go Maki first.
Well, Auckland I have to agree with already. I mentioned Nazca because I like those guys. I kind of just like blanket like most of the trade ones, because when you find one of those, even if you can, I think Zanzibar is probably the best of those maybe. But finding those guys means, especially if you find one early, it's a little easier on your economy at the beginning. I don't really seek out the military ones now that I think about it. I mean, sometimes I want the other religious ones. I forget who gives the East. Trying to think of who gives the Easter Island heads.
That is Laventa.
Yeah, because having
those are
that,
colossal heads. Are you talking about the Maori one?
No. I was thinking of Laventa and those heads because they were there before we had them.
Because Rapa Nui gives the Moa or Moai.
Yeah. So there's two different. Yeah. When you have extra structures, especially, I mean, this is where the Nazca lines are a little more useful, I guess, because you have those a big swath of desert that's flat and there's not a lot you can do with it. And then, oh, look, lines. But then you could, if you had one of the other city states, you could fill in with the religious idol type things and stuff. And, I like it when they give me new things to build, I guess.
Yeah, those are pretty cool.
Yeah, and those Nazca lines give you food, I think, right? So on a desert tile, that's good.
Even on plains, maybe you can't build on a plains tile. But those things like that are helpful because it helps make a crap city more like a marginal city and a marginal city halfway decent.
Nazca lines, +1 faith to adjacent tiles, +1 additional faith to adjacent tiles with resource, +1 food to adjacent desert and desert hill tiles with civil service, +1 production to adjacent flat tiles with mass production, +1 appeal, and cannot be worked.
It gives those bonuses to adjacent tiles?
Yes, because you cannot work a tile that has the Nazca line on it.
Oh, okay. So it's almost like a district.
Kind of, or like a mountain or something like that.
Yeah.
Because you can work districts.
Yeah, you still have specialists available, even though most of the time my cities don't get big enough to worry about that. That's all I can think of at the top of my head about particular city states.
Well, I mean, I'm going to have a very minority opinion in which, and every time I bring this up, people go, wait, really? In my single player games, I don't put in city states because I would prefer to just have more cities and more cities to target with. And, I don't really like it when city states are in my way. And I know that's like crazy because, I can accept that there's a lot of city states that just have really good bonuses. So, why not have the bonuses? So in single player games, I usually turn them off. And in multiplayer games, it doesn't really matter what the city state is. In our turn gas games, which, in our turn cast games, our games are player versus the AI. We find an AI to fight and we do that. And what I do is I just suzerain whatever city state that is between me or near me and my opponent so that the opponent doesn't have it and I have it. So that's really, as far as the effects of city-states, I can't really tell you because I don't really play for city-state effects, which is a very minority opinion, or not really an opinion, but just a minority kind of way of playing it. But that's how city-states are to me.
All right, well, none of the above answer.
Yeah, I sometimes think about maybe we should be turning it off in multiplayer because half the time that just ends up with somebody gets, there's so many times, Grimm is particular about this, but it's in the way. They're positioned in this really weird spot. You could have put a city of their own there, or you get the AI getting stronger by going and conquering them early.
Yeah.
But I think you can raise them in Civ 6, so if it's in your way,
Oh, yeah.
You can.
Yeah.
It's just, that
it's
takes...
a hassle.
When I could have just, not had them in there in the first place.
Could have already been in there and conquered them by now, but no.
I would have to say that I do play with city states. I like, as I said earlier, if we could just bully them like we could in Civ 5, I think this would be a much better implementation of city states than in Civ 5. But unfortunately, we can't. So it's
Dan answer.
Yeah, it's a 2 steps forward, 1 step back kind of thing.
With has to have states. The diplomatic answer.
I would have to say that my number 1, 2, and 3 favorite city state was Vanilla Carthage. the plus one trade route capacity for encampments.
Oh.
Yeah, that was head and shoulders, because trade routes are just so good. I wanted that one every game that I saw them, so I would fight over them. But their new ability, I'm kind of meh, you know, whatever.
Well, so, they're not even Carthage anymore.
Yeah, well, yeah, they're not even in the game anymore, so...
Well, they got replaced with Nagazargamu.
Nagazargamu. We have trouble pronouncing, and most of us haven't seen in the game yet.
The other ones that I like to look for, if I'm playing with any Civ that has, like, a religious flavor or religious abilities, I want Yerevan. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, which lets your apostles choose any promotion.
Yerevan, yes.
Yeah,
so you can, so I can take Martyr, unless I'm playing as, the Khmer, which, who has the ability to get that for free, and then you can take, like, the triple strength promotion or the extra
theological combat.
Yeah, so if I'm playing a religious Civ, then Yerevan shoots, like, right up to my number one, but, of course, if I'm not playing as a religious Civ, then all of the religious ones are kind of like crap, except maybe for the ones that give you a good tile yield. Like Maki, I like Auckland, because, you know, you just get coastal cities. You know, so many of the Civs have coastal starts that getting production on coastal tiles is always really good. And Lisbon is also usually really good, which makes your traders immune to being plundered on water tiles. And that's particularly good on the water because, you know, those eventually the land fills up, you know, with cities and units and stuff like that, so barbarians aren't appearing on them. But if you're sending intercontinental trade, the barbarians, you know, caravels or whatever, will literally just come out of nowhere. And it's so tedious to have to escort your water-based trade units. So if I can find Lisbon, I like having them just to reduce the amount of micromanagement that I have to do for my seafaring trade routes.
I wish I could attach a unit to it.
When you were talking about, there actually are a lot of religious city-states that actually do change the game quite a bit. And I don't think you mentioned Candy, but Candy is also up there as well.
So. Candy is good if you find it early.
Right.
Yes. If I can get Candy, like, if that's, like, the first city-state I meet and I can, you know, easily resolve, like, their first quest, I will sometimes just not even bother exploring until I can get that third envoy in them. And then send my scouts out. Because yes, those free early relics are amazing.
If I was going for a religious victory, I'd probably pay a lot more attention to city-states. Otherwise, yeah, maybe not.
Yes, city-states are very good for religious victories.
Mm-hmm. Jerusalem is freaking amazing for religious victory.
Yeah, it's
I think Jerusalem is not as... I could be wrong. I haven't used them as much. But like their original vanilla ability was, I think, really good. Like, they basically acted as a holy city for whatever religion was in there. The Rise and Fall ability, I think, is probably not as good, but it's still pretty
good.
It
turns every city that has a holy site of yours into a holy city.
Oh, so it's even better.
It's holy even crap. Better, yeah.
I thought they nerfed it. I totally misread that. I thought it just doubled pressure in Jerusalem.
It's four times pressure. Holy cities have four times religious pressure.
Ironically, lately they've shown up in games where I wasn't doing religious victory. Dang it.
Yeah, so that is crazy good.
And then, like, three of the other religious city-states are Laventa, who make colossal heads, and Nazca, who make Nazca lines, and
Armagh, monasteries.
Or Amau, I think is called pronounced.
Okay.
I think. I don't know for sure. It's a Celtic word.
Yeah, if you've got a religious Civ, those religious city-states are really good.
We need the Christie to tell us how to pronounce that.
I was going to say, ask him later.
That's where St. Patrick had his monastery.
Those are the big ones that I really look at. I also like, there was a cultural one that I liked a lot, and I'm blanking on which one it was, so I'm trying
Mohenjo-Daro.
For some reason, Kumasi comes to mind when there's a good
one. That one's good, especially if you've got a lot of deserts. That's a situational one. That one's really good. I think I was thinking of, is it Non-Madal? I don't know how to pronounce that. But
Non-Madal?
Yeah, plus
districts
two
on the coast give culture, yeah.
Yeah, again, so many cities, or so many civs have coastal or near-coast start biases that, like, all those things that buff coastal cities, because they tend to... Coastal cities have, I think, some balancing issues in Civ 6 because water tiles are so unproductive, anything that you get that buffs those cities is really good, and Auckland in particular, because it adds that missing production.
Antananario was really good until recently. It used to be like plus 5% culture for every something that you had, not the same as it is now. And it was uncapped, so if you had like, you could get like plus 50% culture globally.
Yeah, so if you built that that very early theater square, you know, because you're playing as Greece or whatever, and you've got like every writer and musician and artist in the game almost, that buff would be huge.
Now it's plus 2% for every great person.
Up to 30%.
Up to 30%, yeah. Which is still pretty dang good, but not as good.
Yeah. Let's see. Brussels can be really good. Buenos Aires, really good if you're having happiness problems. It makes your bonus resources provide amenity.
Have we forgotten Hattusa? With Gathering Storm, gives you plus 2 of each strategic resource per turn you have revealed but do not own.
Where was the Hattusa in the game a couple weeks ago where I had nothing?
Well, they were busy having nothing, so...
not existing or having existence failure.
If they existed, you wouldn't have nothing, so...
Yeah, it's really hard to make, like, one specific top 5 list because there's a lot of them that are good for certain civs or certain play
situational.
Styles.
I was about to say
there's a lot of them that are very situational. So there's the few of them that I think are just universally good, but it's really hard to pick.
Bandar Brunei, pretty dang good. Although I think it's been changed into Jakarta now, it used to be Jakarta, it's now Bandar Brunei.
Yeah, I think Mackie had mentioned Zanzibar, giving you the cinnamon and cloves luxuries. That's really good.
And they both give double amenities.
I think it only gives you one copy of each, though, so you can't trade them away like you could with the cinnamon and cloves from Indonesia in Civ 5. So I think that's a little bummer.
Well, there was also...
I thought that was a little too much in Civ 5. I always thought it was a little too much, because it was it was also affecting your Diplo, too, and I thought that was a little much.
That was a Civ ability, though.
Yeah, I still thought it was a little much.
Well, considering that they had to be naval, it was not always that great.
And also just sell that stuff straight out the bat for a bunch of money, and that's how a lot of people would bankroll at the start.
Valletta is really nice because you can buy your walls.
That is probably my single favorite military city-state.
And I think, I don't know if they can still do it, but they used to be able to buy...
Yeah, city center buildings, so granaries, monuments, and water mills as well.
But I mean, coastal flood things. The water,
did those
the
count as
coastal
walls?
Coastal barriers. Well, they count as a city center building.
Oh, okay. That's what they do.
I don't know if that still counts. They may have nerfed that.
Yeah, I think I remember reading that being patched out in one of the patches, but I could be wrong.
Actually, no, it says in the wiki that Valletta can still do that, so...
No, okay, wow, that is super powerful. Those things are expensive.
Well, they're expensive as long as you build them too late. If you build them early, they're not as expensive.
I think the cost also depends on how many coastal lowland tiles are near the city.
It scales on number of lowland tiles and number of levels the ocean has risen.
Because sometimes, you know, you have your city-states, and your city-states are there, but it's not always just city-states that are kind of in your way, because sometimes you have free cities that are in your way as well. There is a Sifanatics thread written by Brutus2, who says, are free cities too aggressive? Now, it's been a while since I've played again, but when I was reading about this, it seemed like they are a lot more aggressive than they are supposed to be. My recollection of how free states would play is that they would stay within the tiles, and you know, if they have sight on something, they will go attack it, even if it's not inside their borders. But if, you know, if they don't see anything, they will stay in their borders. What Brutus here is saying is that, or at least from what I can tell here, is that they will go outside of the city that they are a free city of and just start pounding people. They're also talking about, you know, free cities flipping around back and forth and just spawning more troops, which they do that. They've always done that, which is kind of annoying. But if they are seeing them act differently than they have been before?
I don't know.
I was always operating under the assumption that the units just acted the same as barbarian units.
That's
No. They unless they have sight, they will not, or rather, they should not be coming out of the city. And if they are, then that's not what they should be doing. Because if they're going out of the city, then they're not defending the free city. That's the whole point of them generating war,
units for. When I've seen them attacking things, it's been because I'm in a war with another civ, and that's one of their cities I couldn't hold on to, and it flipped. And my army is around their borders, and that probably looks threatening, so they come attacking my army units as I'm passing past, waiting for it to flip back the other way, or I'm going to come in and attack them again.
Yeah.
I don't think I've seen it that. I think once I had a city that had flipped that wasn't, I didn't had nothing to do with the flipping, that was on my borders, but because my units were close to that, I guess they had sight of my units and went, hey, army's near us. We don't like that.
Yeah, if they have sight on something, they will attack it. That's how it's always been. If they are roaming and attacking with no sight, then that is different than what I'm familiar with.
Yeah, because most of the situations I've seen free cities, they are surrounded by my or another civ's borders, and they have visual on our unit, so they're coming up to theirs and going, hey, get out of here, you know.
I think it would be hilarious if the free cities had the same raid logic that regular barbarians had, and they'd send out scouts, and if they find another city, they spawn a bunch of units and go conquer other cities.
Oh dear.
I think that would be hilarious.
I would not think it's hilarious.
Let's not go back to Civ 1 and barbarians with cities.
Yeah, no. It would be funny, but it would probably not be very fun.
I have so much problems managing loyalty that, you know, I always get a bunch of free city flips, which means that they create more and more and more armies.
Yeah, when they flip back and forth, that's really obnoxious. I also want to say that I wonder if maybe the behaviors of the AI might contribute to this a lot, because the AI likes to build its cities very close together, very packed mm-hmm. in. So, you know, I wonder if maybe if they also have sight of things like maybe cities and districts, maybe they go after those to pillage and raid them. Maybe it's not just units.
I don't think I've ever seen them pillage.
I'm trying to remember if I ever, because I most of the times where I have a city near me that flips to a free city, I usually just send in my military and I conquer it, just because, you know, it's like free city, you know, why not? And there's like no diplomatic repercussions, I think, for capturing a free city. Like, I don't think it generates grievances with anybody. In the earlier versions of the game, I don't think it contributed towards your warmonger unless you raised it. So I'm like, yeah, free city, sure, I'll take it. But yeah, so if the AIs are, if the map is just very crowded, you're going to have a lot of cities packed in real tight, and you're probably going to have a lot of units that are just wandering around, because the AI just loves to wander units around for like no good reason. So it could very easily just be that, you know, they're seeing something like that, and then they're moving to it, and then they see something else, and maybe they just keep going, like they kind of daisy chain. Ooh, something shiny, let's go kill it. Ooh, something else shiny, let's go kill it.
What would be your opinion if instead of them, the free cities spawning units, that they get instant walls instead? Because it's always bothered me that they don't get walls.
Do they not, even if the city already had walls?
No, they delete those walls.
Oh, jeez.
So, like, you know, you can easily take a free city back, and I don't know if it's proportional, but I'm thinking maybe, because I don't like the unit clutter. Now, maybe the unit clutter is okay, and I'm just being whiny about it, but like, give them walls and not have units, and just let that be.
Well, the clutter of the map in both Civ 5 and Civ 6 is one of my biggest complaints with both of the games. Like, not just units, but also just how densely packed cities are, and like that discontinuity between the scale of cities and the scale of units. You know, in a tactical combat game like this, I would like to just have more open space in which to maneuver and position units, and not as many choke points and cities and bombardment towers and stuff like that. But yeah, I thought they did get walls. That's
No. Cities do not get walls.
Yeah, I think they definitely should, especially since I think I remember them patching the game at some point to, like, or they entered, or I think Firaxis had at some point entertained the idea of just giving all city-states walls, like, at the start of the game in order to limit the AI, you know, just conquering them within 20 turns.
Yeah, they gave them walls.
Free cities?
Yeah, not free cities.
No,
city states, because the AI was just wandering through and flattening them and getting too fast.
Yeah, no, that change needed to happen.
So it seems odd to me that you would give city states free walls, but not give free cities free walls, especially since free cities come into play later in the game when everybody has a developed military.
Mm-hmm. And since it was recently conquered, there's usually going to be a siege unit around, so...
Well, not necessarily. I mean, it could just flip from pressure without...
Oh, that's true.
Without any conquering going on. Most of the time, it's probably because somebody conquered a city and they couldn't hold on to the loyalty. But it doesn't necessarily have to be. So yeah, I've seen times where a city does flip just from loyalty pressure and then then has a bunch of, like, you know, contemporary units, and like nobody around them has any units, and so that free city is like the most powerful military in the region.
Oh yeah, they can show up with like muskets really early. If I imagine it's the same way with they do it the same way with Civ 5, where they just find whatever is the highest built unit at that time and then just adopt it.
It's either that or it's an average tech level.
I think it would be a lot lower if it was average, because that's including the city-states sort of like pretty much falling off the map.
I also always disliked that free cities are hostile to everyone. Like, you'd kind of think that maybe, like, either the civ that they used to belong to, or, especially in the case of where there was conquest, and, like, they're flipping away from the conquering civ because of loyalty from the original owner. Like, you'd think that the city or the civ that is providing all the loyalty pressure that flipped the city would not be at, you know, hostile towards them.
I disagree. The whole point of it being a free city is that it's not part of the empire anymore because they broke off the empire.
Yeah, I guess I kind of always had... When the concept was announced, I think I was kind of hoping that they would work more along the lines of city-states, where they would, like, revolt, but then they'd maybe be peaceful with everybody, except maybe for the civ that they revolted from. Mm. And then there would actually be, like, some rudimentary level of diplomacy with them.
I think the reason they can't really do that is because the AI logic is not turn by turn, so if a free city is flipped, like, on the next turn to... be friendly to one civ and then friendly to another civ instead of, you know, that one, et cetera, it wouldn't work. Because we know that the AI doesn't plan per turn.
Yeah. Well, and I think there's also a cap on how many, like, quote, civilizations there can be in the game, and that includes city-states. So you can't add more civilizations or city-states than what the game basically starts with. And in order to make the free cities, like, have actual diplomacy and be treated even remotely like city-states, they would probably have to count as a separate faction. And I think the game just, like, at a fundamental level doesn't support that.
It's so a little too much.
Yeah, they just rolled them into the barbarian faction.
Yeah.
And then just changed the behavior slightly. Which is like, yeah, okay, I see why they did that. I understand why they did that. But when I first played the game and I saw how they behaved, I was a little disappointed that they weren't a little more, like, complicated and diplomatically involved than they actually were.
Yeah. Instead, they just make more unit clutter, which is fun. Emphasis on the not fun. Are they too aggressive? I don't know. I don't think so. That said, I haven't played in a while. Unless the AI has changed, then I don't know.
Yeah, I'm in largely the same boat there. I haven't seen them recently enough to have a strong opinion one way or the other.
And I've also gotten smarter with that about going for the capital first, so then I don't have so many loyalty problems. I mean, when I can reach the capital, sometimes that's hard.
Anyway, we need to end the show. So.
And his opponent.
Yeah, sorry.
I have a hard counter to your argument. This has been episode 342 of Polycast. I'm Makalua as usual. Or is it 343? See, I can't even get the number right. I'm such
it's
a good host.
It's 343, yes.
Because I was having to shift through documents this morning. 342 got stuck in my head. Anyway, episode 343. I'm Makalua. With me as usual, Canis.
I'm going to be reading The Child of the Cavern, so...
Mega Bears fan?
I guess I'll have to play with more free cities and find out if they're too aggressive.
And Drew Sane.
Remember, kids, if you see something, slay something.
That's a very grim thing to say. Grim as in grim and grim as in Grimvec.
Encore date, July 27th, 2019. Civilization 4, 5, Beyond Earth, and 6 Sound Clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright The Polycast at thepolycast.net.